We have returned with our featured guest, Howard Brockman. In case you just tuned in, he is a psychotherapist with a very contemporary, holistic approach to counseling people and to having people really use various self-help techniques to improve their life situation and possibly wake up to who they really are. Using a variety of things, including core shamanic practices, energy psychology applications, process work principles. We'll talk about some of those things. Let me do this. I'm going to read again here, all right? I found some interesting little sections in your book that I really enjoy. This one says, in traditional graduate school programs for counseling, social work, and psychology, spiritual issues are rarely, if ever, explicitly taught. Carl Jung addressed these issues, and there are some transpersonal psychology programs that emphasize the spiritual component. But most development psychology textbooks do not discuss spiritual issues as part of the normative human developmental cycle. I find this interesting and dismaying, since spiritual issues are a core human value that frequently inform my work with clients. I recall somewhere else in the book reading a discussion of spirituality, energy, life force, chi, as difficult elements to define, and particularly by science. And maybe that's why it's ignored in part. Can these be defined, and are they similar in some way?
Well, that's a huge topic, Alan.
Very big. I just figured it would give me some rest here. I don't have to ask a question for a while, and you could run with it. No, you know, give it an overview if you can. I mean, spirituality, you know, people say, well, what is it to be spiritual? And you're saying it's a significant, important component. The science doesn't recognize, the science field may not even recognize it, or it's so a nebulous a thing. Yet, we know in Chinese medicine or in acupuncture, or other forms of martial arts, they're in touch with energy movement. We know it, except for maybe some people who are so depressed or suppressed that they've lost the ability to have feeling in their body because they're, you know, residing in their mind all the time. But, you know, what do you say to that?
One of the first things that I do when I meet a new client is I have a conversation with them to find out what their religious tradition is or what religious tradition they come from and what spiritual beliefs they have that they honor, and if they have any, what are their spiritual practices? Because one of the most important components in my work is bringing the power, the healing and transformative power of spirit into the psychotherapy context. So it's very important for me to have a basis, a rapport with my client, to have a mutual understanding about where they're coming from so that I can honor their process and not impose anything about my own beliefs and help them to bring forth and elicit their own spiritual resources. So for somebody, that might mean a place that they can go to in their mind, which is a beautiful place in nature that they like to hike to. For somebody else, it might be a church, and for somebody else, it might be a meditation practice, or for somebody else, it might be a shamanic journey. I can't know about how they reference to and experience that most important core aspect of self, which I call spirit. But it's very important that we both have an understanding that that's going to be part of our work. And I want to know how they appreciate and realize that in their own life from the very beginning of our work together. Most cognitive behavioral therapists are not going to introduce that as an important component of the work because they haven't been trained to consider that it is an important component of the work.
Hmm. All right, let me go forward here. I was thinking, and I mentioned to you earlier about how we've traveled similar paths, and I found that very interesting. It established for me some credibility about the book and your work. and a very comprehensive description of your seeking, experiencing, and shifting paradigms just in chapter one, which is called Beginnings. So I wanted to spend some time with that.
Sure.
And then we'll see where we go. But the first thing that I will read here is a little extensive, so bear with me. And for you, our listeners, too. You know, Howard says, I attended the University of Southern California, USC, for my undergraduate years. I never did connect with a spiritual community in college, even though I was reading The Doors of Perception by Aldous Huxley and the early books of Carlos Castaneda. There were not a group of people with whom I could share this growing spiritual awareness. This was the early 70s, when many people were experimenting with and using drugs. Marijuana, psychedelics were prevalent at the time. I was always mystified by how the doors of perception opened for me when I occasionally smoked marijuana. I related to the experience of Huxley, described in that small volume of the same name, as the filters blocking my perception were removed. This was always a very profound awareness-expanding experience for me, yet for many of my college friends, getting drunk and stoned was just for the sake of the recreational experience of the moment. It was just something to do. Given this cultural milieu, the music of the time and my curiosity, I wanted to try a psychedelic drug, but I was wary. I had read a great deal about overdoses and bad trips. I had also read about the importance of having the proper set, mental attitude, and setting, context, in order to have a successful experience. Now, this could have been me writing about, you know, maybe not USC, but a similar time in my life in the pharmaceutical industry. I relate, and I want to continue with this. Now your good friend Mark comes to support you, as I had a John to support me in Pennsylvania, and you went on a journey, and the journey was with mescaline.
Yes.
Now, how did this change your life? I have a feeling it was pretty profound. You might even talk about what mescaline is, and for those of our listeners who are aghast, maybe, you know, kind of settle them down. And what happened?
Well, what happened for me when I took mescaline, which is a the synthesized components, psychedelic components of peyote, was I came in with expectations that I would begin to have all kinds of hallucinatory experiences. And so my friend Mark had taken mescaline once before and had a positive experience. We had very good rapport. He was a friend of mine from high school, and so he was going to be my support person, my guide, so to speak. And so we were listening to music and waiting for something to happen. And I kept waiting and waiting, and I wasn't having the experience of these hallucinations that I had read so much about. And then, quite spontaneously and unexpectedly, I had this bodily feeling, a physical feeling, come from deep down in my solar plexus, up through my torso to my heart center, and then this energy extended outward to engulf my friend Mark. And what I realized at that moment is that it was pure, unconditional love for my friend. And I said to him, "Well, Mark, I'm having this amazing experience, but I'm embarrassed to say what it is, to talk about it." And he said, as if already knowing, "Is it love?" And I said, "Yes, that's exactly what it is." Well, that really set my mind spinning, and I started thinking very quickly about what would happen in our world if everybody had this initiatory experience, because it was an initiatory experience for me, in terms of a shift of consciousness that would be experientially validated, couldn't be denied, and how people would begin relating to each other in a different way.
I'm going to continue on this thought vein here in a moment, but this, you know, and I think I experienced the same thing. I remember some amazing shifts in perception that changed my life too, including looking out the bay window of my upper middle class American suburban household as an executive, a manager in the pharmaceutical industry, and I saw these birds that I fell in love with, you know, nature's, you know, part of nature. And all of a sudden, one of the birds changed into a chicken. I mean, you know, perceptually.
Yes.
And I went, oh, I eat these things. And then later on, a walk in the woods and, you know, feeling this connection with nature and just kind of reaching up and touching a tree and pulling a leaf off by, you know, not thinking about it. And all of a sudden hearing the leaf or the tree talk to me, you know, like, why did I do that? Why are we not aware of the subtler forms of love and life and how it's all connected? So speaking about that, I want you to take off on love. What, you know, what 30 years later, 35 years later, maybe, you've come to know as a psychotherapist around love and fear, or what it is in our society that contracts us so much that some people may not have experienced the depth of love that you have. Many people maybe not, because they haven't done a sacrament or a ceremony, or in the case of mescaline, which is synthesized, the same thing that members of the Native American church may feel when they do a lodge doing the medicine of peyote.
Well, what I realized at that time was that because so many of my friends in college were having very bad experiences, bad trips with different psychedelics because they were taking them irresponsibly for recreation, mm-hmm. After just a couple more experiences with psychedelics, I realized that these were potentially too dangerous for me to continue to use. I got the lesson from them, and I realized what I wanted more than anything was to be high all the time or experience that state of love all the time, that for those brief periods of time I had through the chemicals. And so that started me on my path of many different spiritual practices through the years. And what I have discovered that blocks people from having that experience, regardless of whatever the source is, and I want to emphasize, this was just an initiatory experience for me. It isn't required of people to have to use a drug to have the initiatory experience to open their heart.
Especially 30 years, 35 years later, because the energies are accelerated. There's a different context, if you know, on the planet right now, too.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. But for most people, for most of the clients that I see who are not open to this experience, who have this experience blocked, it's because of trauma that they've experienced in their lives. And trauma, there's a lot to talk about, and I know we don't have a lot of time, but when people experience trauma, there's always post-traumatic stress that follows. Mm-hmm. And when this happens, people end up in their consciousness frozen in that traumatic experience, unable to move forward because of that fight or flight experience that happens along with the flood of stress hormones that immerse that person.
Yeah. So would you say, as a psychotherapist and as an author of these different dynamic energetic processes, that as a culture, as a society, I'm not talking about everybody, but, you know, in the Western industrialized world, we are in shock and in stress of a substantial nature, and we have not been able to break out of a fear matrix, that fear dominates our lives for the most part, unless people do a lot of work on themselves like you've done, and a lot of people haven't done all the things that you've done?
I would say absolutely, mm-hmm. And you can look to the statistics by the pharmaceutical companies for how many people are presently taking pharmaceutical drugs for mood disorders, including depression and anxiety. In 2002, the statistics were over 30 million Americans are taking drugs because they're anxious and they're depressed and they're carrying traumatic residue that they haven't been able to deal with. Mm-hmm. And so this speaks to that very fact that people are constantly in a state of trauma to varying degrees that creates the insomnia, that creates the panic attacks, that creates the dissociative episodes so that people can't concentrate at their work and so on. Mm-hmm.
I want to add something to that, being an ex-pharmaceutical executive myself and, kind of an escapee out of the system. And I don't want to make all pharmaceuticals bad. As we talked earlier, some emergency remedies are really important in our lives. But what I'm getting from what you're saying is that the pharmaceutical applications and treatments that are mainstream medical right now are really suppressive of symptoms. And that trauma that we're talking about never gets released, and it will, continue to look for a way to surface and be healed. And if you keep taking suppressive modalities, whether it's a pharmaceutical product or just living your life in a trance, it's just not going to happen.
That's right.
Yeah.
And what happens is that most people end up becoming worse in terms of the symptoms they generate because of the side effects of the drugs and the need to keep taking them. And this feeling that every one of my clients who comes in with, who have either been on drugs or are currently on these pharmaceutical drugs, that they know that something isn't right. They know that there's something in them that is unhealed, and they don't know what else to do because other cognitive therapists have not been able to address, identify, and release the trauma that's generating the symptoms.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's take another break here with our featured guest, Howard Brockman. We are talking about his life and his work, Dynamic Energetic Healing, a culmination of 35-plus years in practice and on the spiritual path as a seeker. We'll continue.